And I just, be a little bit so just as far away as okay. Just a disclaimer, I wasn't told that it's supposed to be a Seder, so a Seder, what? When I entered the Rav Shir in Elul, Leminyanam, 1972, I was mesmerized by the Rav's mastery of Kol HaTorah Kula. I remember Tzroyim, Kairos, it was just... But after Sukkos, the Rav came in and he had asked the question, and had an idea, and didn't have a proof for it. And he said that he was studying with his grandson and came across a Baal HaMor, and the Baal HaMor is a proof to his question. That was my first introduction to Rav Moshe. I didn't have a name, but that's what it was. The truth is, at that point, I didn't realize what it meant that the Rav was learning with Rav Moshe, Zecher Tzadik LeKodesh Levracha. You'll excuse me, I won't say that every time because I think it'll be a little bit Rav also. Right? In my opinion, I think to best to capsulize what it probably was is when the Rav was seven, I don't know what the legend, whether it was seven exactly or whatever, he met Rav Chaim. Not sure, maybe it was even by the Biskurov's wedding. I'm not sure exactly, I have to see exactly what it was. Rav Chaim gave him a test. And he was learning Baba Kama at that time. And what he ended up saying over is Prokim in Tanya Baal Peh. And Rav Chaim basically told his son Rav Moshe, Nemaris Mcheda, take him out from Cheda and you should learn with him. And that started a period of at least over 15 years of learning together and many years afterwards of exchange of letters, which ended up as the is basically the Igus HaGrid. I think at least the best that, you know, I could probably place it is the same way, not for the same reason, I hope, the same way that that Rav Chaim, let's say, told Rav Moshe to take the Rav and study with him, I feel that the Rav studied with Moshe, Rav Moshe, because he felt that Rav Moshe was his intellectual heir. In fact, The reason why I attempt to say this is on one occasion I was sitting in the apartment with the Rav, and he confided in me. He told me that he put more into Rav Moshe than any other person. In the summer, of 1973, Rav Moshe paid me a visit at his apartment, my apartment in Brookline. I was studying that summer. Rav was learning the second Perek Kedushin, and Rav Moshe paid a visit to me at the apartment. I was surprised to see him, and he tells me that he's going to be in New York next year. That's you know, I don't think it was public knowledge at that point. And he asked me to learn with him. And the truth is, I think, to a large extent, the rest is history. I assume, I can only say it one way, that we impacted on each other's lives, and who we were, who we are, was a large expression of our learning together. First, I want to tell you something, and this is a very important remark. At that point, we were clearly typical American young men. And frankly, I could describe it in very graphic terms. And I think the description many of the Talmidim would gain from it and say, you know, I can identify with that, okay? But I'm sure there will be some that will use it in a way that it shouldn't be used. So let me just say that we were typical American young men, okay? And I'm saying this because this is not a eulogy. It's very clear in the Rambam, you know, I guess the minig olam of Shlishim, but the eulogy is basically in Rambam is only until the end of Shiva. So the point of this, I guess, is what they called his eulogus, that someone could identify that a young American, at that point he was a teenager, could make something out of himself. And lo b'shamayim he. When we started learning, we embarked together on a journey. And I must say for myself, and I assume that I could say for him, that where we ended up was beyond our horizons at that point. To the best of my recollection, the Seder that we were supposed to have, I think he ended up telling me late, and I had made Stoyim, and I had a slot, basically, from after Ma'ariv, which was 10:15, till 12. That was the slot that I had. And we started. And we started learning that evening. And I sensed a determination within him that at 12 o'clock, I was probably, I don't know the best way to say, ashamed or to close the Gemara. And this continued till 1, till 2. And I think it might have ended the first time at 4, okay? And as the days proceeded, the Seder extended later on into the evening or the morning, whatever you like to call it, and started earlier. The Tanchuma says very clearly that a person at 18 is like a sus, okay? And the comparison to a horse is, at that point in life, every young man is trying to test what the limits are. And we clearly were trying to test that. Just to tell you how tired I was, I can't speak for Moshe. You know, I can remember, you know, him falling apart also. You know, we each fell apart each other every time. But I remember I used to be walking sometimes in the Beis Medrash, and I lifted my foot up and I went into REM sleep, and I woke myself up with a thud and I almost fell over. It got to a point that even though no one was allowed to know, you know, what exactly we were doing when we were there, because there were people, like, you know, we saw there were spies around trying to find them, but no one was able to stay up as long to see when it ended. So, to the best of my recollection, I would say that if I had 2 hours of sleep at night, any night of the week, that was good. Okay, and we used to daven v'sikin after it was over, then probably retire for 2 hours, and then, you know, we started again. Friday was different, okay? Friday morning, after the v'sikin, and, you know, as tired as we were, we decided we had to capitulate and capsulize what we had done during the week. And we were sitting writing. I have some of the papers somewhere in my house. I'm not sure if they're actually in any order or whatever it is. But I have a vivid recollection of working. See, he was studying with his grandfather, Moshe. He was studying Menaches at that time. I remember, like, I picked up with him, with his grandfather, holding in Vavam and Aleph, okay? Vavam and Aleph, and he used to go in every 2 weeks to Brookline and spend the whole weekend with his Zayden. And they were studying, he used to come back and report back, and we used to go over the shir and whatever, and this and that. And I remember working on Daf Tes, Omer Aleph, about Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish and Bolo, Chutz Lazoro, what the Dimincha, the Kli, what the Kli is talking about, and working back and forth and thinking about this way and that way and this way, trying to perfect it, but never being happy and never patting ourselves on the back and that we got it. That year, there were two events that occurred The first one that I relate to you, I didn't catch what it was until many years later. And the second one, I vividly remember. And I relate those two events. But Moshe comes back from his trip in Boston. He said that I accompanied my grandfather to a hospital visit, and we spent 4 hours there by Reb Shmuel Rozovsky. So, frankly, an American teenager like myself, who I had no clue who that was. So I didn't ask him any questions. I said, so let's get back learning. And that was the end of the story. Years later, I heard various versions of this encounter. It was 4 hours that they talked to Sugis and Avodah Zorah. They were talking. It was basically, they spoke 4 hours, and it encompassed kimat and anyone's knowledge, and it's called Yoni Atera. And the way it was reported to me by, I heard this from a few people, that Reb Shmuel Rozovsky was dazzled by the Rav. And one report said, which I'm not sure, all these reports, hyperbole, but I learned in hyperbole, you take off the 20, 30, 40, 50%, you're still left with something. And one nusach was, what Brisker Rav was in Kochim, the Rav is in Kol HaTorah Kula. So I assume, and just an assumption, I know you have to ask his children, we never discussed Reb Shmuel Rozovsky again after that. I assume that this meeting had an astounding impact on Reb Moshe, understanding and seeing with his own eyes what it means to be shelet and kol HaTorah Kula. And I assume at that point, Reb Moshe's horizons changed, and it wasn't just, let's see what our typical American guys can sit and what we can take in. It became a quest to try as much as he could to fulfill the Rav's dream of his becoming the Rav's intellectual heir. The second story that I relate, and I've related this in the past, this first story, each one I'll probably tell over a little bit differently. This was in 1973, so those who have some recollection of history, that was the year of the oil embargo. They weren't very happy with the Americans, the Arabs, and the price of oil was very high. And what suffered in yeshiva was not the offices of the secretaries, but it was the base measures at night. And you have to understand, in New York, in a wintry night, we're talking about 3-4 o'clock in the morning, it's cold. And it didn't stop us. We were learning. We were learning. But I'll tell you something. I think, maybe I'm wrong, I think the rats in the base measures hid under the heaters, okay? And if the heaters weren't on, what they were doing was they were dancing around the base measures because it was so cold. I'm not sure in cold-blooded, when you get cold or whatever it was, but it was cold. And I said to myself, there's one thing, sleep and cold, but there was nothing that stopped us. I just want to tell you something. Not only were we typical American boys, but as being typical American boys, each one had his own personal obstacles. And they were very difficult circumstances. It wasn't like, your fairy tale thing and the road, the road I was learning with him, here's the road to godlessness. And it was a very, very winding and difficult road. And there were many times we used to take walks and discuss each other's difficulties and challenges. I'm only relating this because if I present this, that we were two young boys and had the Rav as our mentor and this as being shared and called a Torah Kula and his private tutor, it's an easy path. It wasn't an easy path at all. There were many, many difficulties. We studied many years. We grew together. I remember I introduced him to Rav Gershon Zaks, Zichrono Livracha. I also brought him into Rav Shneur Kotler's house. I remember Rav Itzin Kotler thanking me profusely from the Rosh Yeshiva, thanking me so much for bringing Rav Moshe there. Rav Moshe, in his quest to understand Kol HaTorah Kula, decided he had to broaden his horizons. He went to Eretz Yisrael to study Rav David. Then he told me at one point that he thought the answer was Rav Gershon Zaks. And he asked me to join him. We studied there. We studied Kochim. And we studied Moed. There were years that we were not together, and there were many letters that we exchanged. An example of a letter, which was written probably by Moshe to me about probably over 40 years ago. He writes at the end of a letter, Asayim beheora achas bedova ma'anyen. Something interesting. Okay. And the next sentence is very odd because it's almost like he's kicking himself that he wasn't aware of this before. Bo rak ko'es niskalti.
you know. Every kashin called Torah Kuli should have been on top of, you know, why did it just happen now? So he said, it writes like this, Ayin Bereshis Parshas Toldos. This is this week's parsha. And he points out to a Targum Tof Yud, where you are Targum Yushalmi, Targum Yonison. And what the story is there is that it seems that Yitzchak Avinu wanted to bring a Korban Pesach and a Chagiga. And Rav Moshe asks me, how could it be such a thing since Pesach is also Bavomo? And that was the... and then he said, he got like this, but so chiyun, how a Pesach also Bavomos Yochid, afilu b'shas heta Bavomos, tein l'chochem v'yech kamoid. And the truth is, I wrote him a tshuva, which is not in the gay now, and, you know, whatever it is. But the bottom line, and, you know, there are many stories and many things that can relate. The bottom line is everyone should understand that whatever you really want to do and you put your mind to it, you'll find that you're able to accomplish. And don't, you see, but it's very important, you shouldn't say, I'm going to be like that, because you're going to fall flat on your face. You set reasonable goals, and you're clearly committed to it. In an unwavering commitment, everyone could become a gadol in their own right, whether with the Rebbe, Reb Zusha, whether you're this or that, but the important point is you can fulfill your potential by putting your mind to it. And the Rebbeinu, I didn't say something wrong. And everyone should just take away from this that giving something your utmost, you can end up doing things and being something that you never dreamed possible. Yehi zichro baruch. What? I never gave them to anyone. I only gave them to one person. Okay. I didn't get one. I never got these. My letters exist.